So can you talk more about engagement rate and compare it versus bounce rate?
Google came up with this metric called an engaged session, and they defined it for us. It's any session that's...
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the SEO Entrepreneur Show. Super excited to have Bree Anderson. She is the founder, CEO, president of Beast Analytics. And I'm really excited about this one because, you know, a lot of our previous episodes, we've been really geeking out about SEO. But now I think it's time to finally talk about some GA4, which is the big elephant in the room. So thank you so much for coming on, Bree.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you know, solopreneur, you wear a lot of hats, right?
Yeah, that's right. So give me some background on how you got into this analytics field.
Yeah, so I actually got into marketing because I was doing like websites and stuff for my friends that were in bands. And that eventually turned into like social media because I wasn't making good websites. I then started doing like social media stuff. And, you know, bands don't really make a lot of money, especially not local bands. So they could never pay me. So by the time I got to college, I was like, I need like a real job probably at some point. So I went and worked at an agency doing social media marketing. And they were like, great, we have these clients that need social. So can you like tweet about sandwiches? And I was like, oh, maybe I don't really like this. And so instead, like I went down the paid route, right? So I started doing paid social, and then paid Google ads and whatnot. And I'll never forget the first time they were like, okay, here's $1,500. We want to run a campaign. And I'm like 19, like, that's like 2 months rent for me. Like that's a lot of money. You're sure you want to hand that to me right now? And so I was terrified I was going to waste these people's money. So I looked into like, how do you track this? And Google Analytics was, you know, Universal Analytics wasn't out yet. It was still classic. But we were able to attribute revenue from our Google ads to, you know, profit. And from then on, I was just hooked. I never wanted to spend money without knowing where it was going. And, you know, I've done a lot of things, but, you know, I've done, like I said, I did social, I did paid social, I did paid Google, I did SEO, I did, you know, all these different things. But at the end of the day, I just kept going back to the numbers. And so now that's all I do with people is help them create tracking plans, make sure they get their data, understand it, and then use it in a strategic way. So once I really started to lean into that, I feel like I've grown even more since then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've really niched down. So how important has that been for your growth?
Oh, I mean, the second that I decided like, hey, you know, it's funny if you ask certain people about me, you know, like I've spoke at Social Media Marketing World, for instance, they'll be like, oh, she's the SEO girl. Because I'm like, I'm the only one in the room really that's talking about SEO, right? If I go to like MozCon, it's like, oh, she's the analytics person. You know, all these different places have different ideas of like what I can do. But once I was like, no, y'all, like I do analytics, right? Like I do data-driven marketing. Like I know that was a buzzword 5 years ago, but for real, that's what we're doing. That helped. But then too, when GA4 came out, I was one of the only ones that was like, if you've looked at everything that's been going on, like we're going to have to use GA4 because this is like a legality thing. This isn't like Google just wanted to create a new platform. Right. So I was really the only one that kind of like stuck it out and was like encouraging people to get involved with GA4. And so I think that's really been like helpful for my business. Is I was one of the first, and then I just kept talking about it.
Yeah. So was it a scary transition when you did make that decision where it was like, okay, I'm not going to do any of this other stuff and I'm just going to do analytics? Like, was that kind of a shaky time? Cause I know that can be a scary decision to make.
Yeah. I mean, anytime as an entrepreneur that you're turning away business, things get scary, feel scary, yeah. Right? Where you're like, yeah, I mean, I could do that, but it's not going to be the best use of your budget or my time because it's going to take me five times longer to do, you know, X, Y, Z because it's not my like day to day. So yeah, it felt scary. And two, like now you have to figure out how to sell something. But like I said, it's definitely helped 20 times more than it's hurt anything.
Right. So what does your kind of sales process look like now? So obviously you've positioned yourself as this analytics person. So now you're attracting the right people into your world. So what does it look like once they get into your world?
Yeah, especially right now, I think everyone has now is the right time to kind of do a full audit of like, what is our tracking process? Because everyone's starting from zero with GA4. So whether you made the switch as soon as your universal analytics cut off, which for some people was only like 3 weeks ago, even though it's September, or you made that switch when GA4 first came out in October of 2020, it's still like it's definitely still a new platform and we're still working things out. But everybody started from zero and it was a really good time for people to go, okay, what are we tracking? How did we track that? What is this working? And so right now, what I do a lot of, and this is the first step that everybody goes through when we start working together, it is an audit, a tracking plan audit. So is our Google Analytics collecting what it needs to collect? And then, you know, we work through if it's not, how do we fix that? What does the tracking plan need to look like? We need to document everything. That's another big thing that people didn't do with Universal Analytics. Most of the time, people don't do with their analytics at all. But I think it's because for the last however long, for the most part, analytics is something that just gets tossed from team to team, right? Like at first it was like, oh, the IT team's going to handle that. And then it was like, oh no, maybe the web dev team. And then it was, oh, maybe marketing. And now all these people have their hands in it and they're making changes and, you know, what have you. So I'm really working with people to document. So we do the audit. We make recommendations for, you know, if things need to be tracked or fixed. So then it turns into implementation for most people and we document everything. And then from there on out, it's, you know, helping them understand their data. So doing some sort of reporting every month and meeting with people and saying like, these are the things that worked, maybe didn't work, things that could be opportunities. And then here are some tests to run and we'll reconvene and see if we're on track. So it's kind of what the process looks like today. Who knows what it'll look like in a couple months, but that's right. What it looks like today.
Yeah. So with the audit, are you doing kind of like a one-time investment type of situation for that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So,
all right.
So the audit is, you know, a one-time thing. And then the implementation is generally a one-time thing, depending on what we decide our goals are, right? Like people always have an idea that the goal of the website is we want sales or we want leads, but the reality of it is that's not the only thing you're being measured on. Like it's the big thing, right? But, you know, you might have a client that you're creating content for and they're like, but did the content have anything to do with our sales or our leads? And you have to be able to prove that, right? And in GA4, it's not as easy as going and looking for a page value. Like you have to create your own ways to track those things. So really getting into the nitty gritty of like, okay, these are our business goals, but what are our stakeholders' goals? And then what is my management team's goals? And what are my personal goals? And making sure that all of those things are being tracked as well. So that all happens with the implementation. And then, if things change over time, right, there's ways to work that in as well.
Yeah. So, and you've also found a way to integrate a little bit of recurring, you know, work there. So that's an interesting, cause it, to me, it's like almost like, okay, a lot of people probably think, oh, the analytics is set up. We're done with Bree. She's good to go. We don't need her anymore. Maybe, you know, cause the analytics is good to go. So how do you educate them on the fact that like, it's not done. Like there's more work that has to continue to happen every single month or every quarter, whatever that may be.
Right. Well, it's interesting because the majority of people that I'm working with now, right? You're either spending a crap ton of money or you're making a good amount of money, but you want to get to that next level. And really the only way to do either of those things is to use the numbers, right? If you're spending a lot of money, you have to prove that it's going to the right place. Right. You know, and I offer training. So that's something that I tell people too, you know, like once we have all this set up, if you want me to do a training for you and then you go your own way, like, that's fine. I'm not really upset by that. You know, the reason that I started Beast Analytics was because I wanted to educate and empower people with numbers. Like, a lot of times when I've worked at a couple different agencies, I've worked in-house, and a lot of times people are afraid of their numbers or they never get access to them at all. And so the goal for Beast Analytics was like, no, people need to be using their numbers. A lot of times they don't know what to ask for. So let's educate them about what to ask for. So I create a bunch of content that I share with people. But I believe that with my clients as well. Like, I don't want them to feel like they have to use me forever and ever and ever. I mean, if they want to, fine. You know, if it makes sense for both of us, but the goal is more so like, I want people to feel confident in going into analytics and finding the information they need and making educated decisions to move forward.
Yeah, I want to get into obviously the GA4, like real nuanced specific right. stuff, but they're kind of want to stay a little bit higher level just as far as analytics goes. Because I think, mm-hmm. So when you're like your positioning as far as the analytics, are you mainly focused on the organic side? Or are you looking across the board, like every traffic source?
Yeah, it's across the board. So, obviously, you know, SEO, I have a lot of friends in SEO. I focused on SEO for a while. And so I get a lot of people coming to me because they know me through like the industry. And so the focus there is organic, obviously, but, no, I mean, I have clients where we're tracking Facebook ads and Snapchat and TikTok and organic social and all those. And so we create like an actual full blown tracking plan. So how are we going to bring all of these things in, and be able to splice and dice them the way that we want to, and understand like the value each of them are bringing in individually, but also how they work together. So because I've worked, you know, I worked in social, I worked in paid, and I worked in SEO, like I understand that all of those things are working together more times than not. And so helping people really, especially now, you know, with an impending doom of like a recession or whatever, and people's jobs are being taken away and things like, I always want people to feel empowered to say, no, this is the value that I bring, and to be able to show that with numbers. And a lot of times what we do as individuals is part of a bigger picture. And so you have to be able to say, you know, yeah, maybe we didn't bring in last click all of this revenue, but we were part of 50% of journeys, like purchasing journeys. So like, if you take that away, there's a good chance you're losing out on a good amount of revenue there.
Yeah, that's, I want to talk about the thing that just is the most difficult of all of this, which is attribution. Because right. especially when you're running multiple different channels, like, you know, you got a podcast and you got a YouTube channel and you got Twitter and then you're doing SEO on Google. Like, so to the best of your ability, how do you track the origin of that source? And I know that's a very loaded question. Because for me, it's very difficult because like when I have my attribution for my training, it will say they came from YouTube, right? A lot of the time. But like, did they really come from YouTube, or did they see a tweet and then end up on YouTube? And then, you know, so how do you deal with that in particular?
Right. I mean, those kinds of things, that's where it's really important that you're not just tracking like, you know, website data. Like, you also have to be looking at your social data. So like, did you get shit ton of clicks on your tweet that was linking to a YouTube page, and then all of a sudden you got all these course sales from YouTube, you know, then like, right. Yeah. Okay. Those things are working together. Or, you know, maybe it's like, well, we don't know if you didn't want to do it that way. It's like, well, then another option is to put the YouTube video on your site and like a blog post, and then you're getting it straight from Twitter onto, right? Like, it's helping people work through those problems though. Like, we have all of these things that are going to work together. We really need to sit down. And this is something that a lot of people do after they've already created, like, this is going to be my flow, right? And now we have to figure out how we're going to track it, where it's like, okay, if we can come up with a plan first, then we can have a tracking plan before, and we can say, oh, instead of sending people from platform to platform to platform, we're just going to put the tweet and send them to a landing page on the website that has the video front and center that they interact with, an embedded YouTube video, because Google's still going to attribute it to Twitter, you know, first, if we do it that way, because the website session. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of digging with a client to go, okay, but what is the plan here? And then looking again at like that platform data. So we can't just say like, yeah, Facebook led to this much. Like, we also have to go in and look at all of the Facebook posts and see, where are we sending people? Did we reply? That's another thing. Like, did we reply in the comments with a link? Mm. And then people came from the comment. There are just so many different, yeah, attribution's a hard one. It definitely is. It takes a lot of brain power.
Yeah, you're a brave one for taking it on. The other thing too is, I actually really like what you're saying. So basically, you're saying that you need to establish the home base, which is the website. I'm assuming that's like really that should be kind of the centerpiece of really everything that you're doing, so you can bring it into the Google Analytics world, which then you can kind of control the data a little bit better. Okay. Yeah. Okay, got it. One thing I found too, and I don't know how experienced you are with Schedule Once. Have you used Schedule Once? Like, do you know the tracking with Schedule Once at all? It's basically a Calendly alternative.
Yeah.
But one thing in my business that's difficult is we'll send someone to our, you know, like our pre-sale page. Okay. And then we'll send them to an application page that's hosted on Schedule Once. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to get that cross domain tracking, it's never clean in that way. So is there a workaround for that? Is there a way to at least try to get that, the accuracy up more on that?
Yeah. So you can, like, cross domain tracking, I think, is a lot easier in GA4, because you just put the code on, you know, the Schedule Once, backend, and then you go into your, see, this is a hard thing about GA4 though, is everything's like 17 steps. So if you go into admin data streams, and then you go into the data streams and scroll down and go to configure tag settings and see all, you'll see the option for cross domain tracking. But once you get there, right, that's going to be the hardest part. Once you get there, you just say, hey, all of these domains are going to be sending traffic here. And so like, it, all it does, if you haven't noticed, when you are, so like, let's say they come, they're on your website, and then they're sent out to Schedule Once. If you have cross domain tracking set up correctly, when they get to Schedule Once, if you look at the URL, it just has like a GA equals, and then it has like a session ID, basically, is what's up there. And then once they go from Schedule Once back to your site, if that's how that flow goes, it'll keep that GA equals whatever, so that it keeps the session ID the same. So in theory, what should happen is that original session source, so when they came to your website, should be attributed to all of those different page views in that one session. Does it always work that way? No. Should it? Yes. But that's the thing that I tell people about analytics is like, you're never going to have one-to-one data. It's never going to be perfect. But we want to get as close as we can get without also like being prohibitive to the overall process. Like, we don't need to do, I don't know. I'm kind of a believer that like good enough is good enough. And especially because like Google Analytics is free, right?
Yeah.
And it gives us a lot of things that we couldn't probably afford otherwise. Like, I'm a small business owner, right? This is a small business. I don't necessarily have the funds to go spend, you know, a couple grand a month on an analytics platform. So Google Analytics for me, I'm like, I feel fine with it.
Right. So I'm going to bring up the geeky SEO side of this for a second, because one of the questions I hear a lot, especially more from the business owner side, not so much like the agency side, is, okay, we create informational content, right? We create top of the funnel informational content designed for awareness. You could argue to build topic authority, whatever the purpose is. And we know it doesn't convert well, right? Most informational content doesn't convert well. But the question is, how do we track the performance of that informational content within the context of analytics, which leads to, you know, those deeper funnel objectives?
Right. So this is something that's actually much harder in GA4 than it was in Universal Analytics, because in Universal Analytics, we got a metric that was like a page value metric, right? So they assigned an actual monetary value based on, you know, if you had e-commerce on your site, I guess. But what I have encouraged people to do in GA4, we don't have that metric, at least not yet. I have a feeling that it'll probably roll out. Like, if you've been paying attention, Google has rolled out like 30 updates to GA4 this year alone. Right. So I suspect we'll see it at some point. But even if we don't, what I've encouraged people to do is, you can build audiences in GA4 the same way that you were able to in UA. But when you create an audience, you can create an event that is triggered as well. So the recommendation that I've been making to people is, create an audience for people that visit the blog or wherever that informational content lives. Or if you don't have like a URL structure, which I highly suggest having, but if you can't break it down by URL structure, using that content group tag in your data layer or variable in your data layer. And then you can say, if anybody comes to the blog and then they convert, we want to put them in an audience, right? So now we have a number of users. We know this many users have gotten to XYZ point, whether it's a checkout, whether it's they filled out a form fill, whatever they did, you can add them to an audience, but also trigger an event so you can see how many times it's happening, right? Because we don't have, there's not really, okay, so that will tell you like the actual number, right? The other option is to like create a segment of converters, right? So whether that's purchasers, form fills, people that called, whatever it is. And then look at under engagement, you can look at pages and screens, and you can see the top pages viewed by those people. Now, the only bad part about that is it would be before or after the conversion, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like if they convert and then they look at how do you add closed captioning to a video, it's like that didn't really help them convert. Now it's helping them because they have our solution, right?
Right.
And then the other option, which is helpful for some, not all, especially depending on how you have your checkout process or conversion flow set up, is in Explore, which is a new section of GA4, you can use the path flow, which is like our behavior flow from Universal Analytics. So in that path flow like chart, it shows you can start with the end. So if you just hit start over in the top right corner, you can choose an ending point. So the ending point would be like, we'll just say add to cart, and then you can work backwards and it will show you what pages people were looking at before. So there are a lot of different ways to do it. It kind of depends on what the exact thing is you're trying to show people. But I think the best way that I've seen at this point in time is to create that audience and trigger an event when people are added to it.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good process. I want to talk about one thing, because obviously you're in the marketer community, SEO community, and the overall sentiment about GA4, I would say, is not exactly positive for the most part. So do you agree with that sentiment? Especially from someone like yourself, who's so deep in, like you're really deep in it. So is there any way that it's grown on you in any way compared to the previous version?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would say for the last 18 months I've been using GA4 exclusively. I'll head over to UA if there's like a discrepancy in data that I need to like take a look at and see if things were tracking correctly there, or you know, for very, very specific things. But I kind of made the switch over to GA4. I think, listen, change is hard. Change is hard for everyone. In Universal Analytics, Universal Analytics for like 10 years. So it's really hard, especially for people that were using it at the beginning. It's really hard to say, okay, now you have something completely different. Have fun. Like, that's like saying, instead of waking up and then immediately brushing your teeth like you have for the last 10 years, now you have to go put your pants on first. Or like, you know what I mean? Like changing something that you've been doing, like whatever that routine is, like now you have to break that. It's completely different. And I think the biggest thing, people are like, I can't find what I need. Well, if you think about it, Universal Analytics, like that navigation was endlessly long. Like it was almost like an infinite, you could just keep opening things. So basically there was like a view for every report. And GA4, you don't have that. It's basically like, hey, this is a pages report, and you go into the pages report, and then there's the drop down so you can change the dimension. And it's like, you can see your landing page, you can see this page, you can see that page, which is just very different, right? It is very different. I think Google also, I mean, anytime you're forced into change, there's going to be resistance. Anytime you are forced into change and you don't have the resources to be successful, there's going to be even more resistance. And Google didn't do a very good job offering up any sort of resources, in my opinion, that were actually helpful to people. So I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to change. People don't like change. And for most people, I would argue, analytics is like an unfortunate necessity of being a marketer. And, so when you finally feel like, okay, I can do this with my eyes shut, I can go grab the numbers that I need for this meeting with my eyes shut, and now you have to relearn it, and you're like, the last thing I want to do is go learn a new analytics platform. Like, yeah, that's a bummer.
Right. Yeah, you've developed all the muscle memory.
Personally, I think it's, I think it's pretty good. Like as an analyst, I understand that there is like a bias there for sure, because I'm going to want to see and be able to do things differently than a small business owner that's just trying to see how much money they made, you know? So I can admit that like, yeah, there's definitely a bias there. But I think, you know, if you hadn't learned Universal Analytics at all and you were just thrown into GA4, I think you would have a lot different opinion about how bad it is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's, I kind of felt like that when the transition was happening. I'm like, oh, I have to do another analytics. It's more of like, I don't have time to invest to learn another platform at this point. But one thing that I found, this is more in the last 6 months or so, because of the change, I've had to change our audit process, because we use Screaming Frog. And so we would integrate the API. And so when we integrate the GA4 API, the data is different. And so one data point though in there that has really been useful with GA4 that wasn't present with the original version, is engagement rate. So we've been putting that in there in the audit. And so now what we could do is you can actually filter pages and see like, okay, what pages have poor engagement rate, and you can actually go through and improve those pages. I've actually stacked one more element onto that, as we use Mouseflow and, you know, Hotjar, whatever, you could use whichever one, but we stacked that on top of it. And we've come to find out, usually when there's poor engagement rate on analytics, then you cross check with Mouseflow, it's linked up pretty well. And usually you'll find like, okay, this page really sucks. Like we need to do something here, or vice
versa. People are very confused. They just keep clicking on things. Yeah.
Right. Or vice versa. Like this page is doing really well. People are really liking it. So maybe we should add some more CTAs in here. Maybe we should try to push people deeper in the funnel. So it can go both directions. So can you talk more about engagement rate and compare versus bounce rate? Because I know there's a little difference there.
Yeah. So you might be the only SEO that I've talked to that's like like engagement rate, and I don't miss bounce rate. Yeah. So engagement was actually something. So I spoke at MozCon in 2021 on GA4. It was like 6 months old at this point. Like it was very new still. And that was one of the things. But what I found really interesting when GA4 came out, it was still missing a lot of things. Like we didn't even have landing page as a dimension to access in GA4. It was still missing a ton of things. But from the very beginning, we were given this engagement rate, right? We were given engagement metrics that had replaced our behavior metrics. So you think your average session duration, pages per session, things of that nature. Instead, they call them engagement metrics, and we had like average engaged session, average engaged sessions per user, et cetera, et cetera. So Google came up with this metric called an engaged session, and they defined it for us. They give us a definition of what an engaged session is. It's any session that's two or more pages or 10 seconds long or contains a conversion event. So if you have
it doesn't need all three of those, correct?
Nope. It's one of them. So quick note here, don't make a conversion. Like if you look in the GA4 demo account, Google has a first visit marked as a conversion. Like don't do that because everything's going to be considered an engaged session. It's going to mess up all your data. A lot of people, so you can like go in and manually change like your timeout sessions or what the engaged session number is. They're like, oh, well, 10 seconds isn't an engaged session, which I would argue it probably is because most people make a decision about a website in like 2 seconds and they're like, no, that's not what I need. And then they leave. But, you know, everybody kind of has their own idea of this. But like in my eyes, anytime Google wants to tell me what they consider to be engaged, I'm like, yes, we're keeping that. We're going to highlight this right here. That maybe just be the SEO in me. That's like, oh, that could be a tip, right? Like we want to make sure, you know, one of these three things is happening. And so with that, Google is, especially people that try and compare their universal analytics to their GA4 data, which there's a ton of reasons why you shouldn't do that. But where people get tripped up is the users, right? So in GA4, they're reporting on engaged users, not total users. Total users is that exactly what it sounds like. All of the users that come to your website, which is what we got in Universal Analytics. But in GA4, they're reporting on engaged users, which is any user that has spent 10 or more seconds, visited two or more pages, or completed a conversion event, right? And with that came like our engagement rate. So the percentage of sessions in which somebody is engaged with the website. And what's really nice about it too, from like an analytical standpoint, is we used to say, oh, you want all of your metrics to go up. Obviously, you want all of your metrics to go up, except for bounce rate. You want that one to go down. But it's like, now you can just say, we want all of our metrics to go up. We want a higher engagement rate. We want people to be spending more time on the site, you know, so on and so forth. So it's pretty similar to what bounce rate was, except for bounce rate was always elusive. Like we kind of had an idea of like how it was being calculated, but this time Google's saying like point blank period, this is how we are calculating this metric, which is super nice.
Right. And obviously, you know, there's going to be some SEOs who will get super granular about this and say, well, you know, if you satisfy the intent technically, then they could bounce, and that is technically a proper session.
Yeah. And my rebuttal there would be like, well, if you could satisfy the intent that quickly, right, without a conversion event, right? So if they weren't like clicking to call, or they weren't, you know, clicking to email or do whatever, which all of those things could be marked as a conversion, and they didn't have to go to another page, it's more than likely it should be, or there already is on the SERP, some sort of knowledge graph, right? Or a featured snippet.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, in 10 seconds or less, I can read this and get my answer. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, there are tons of different arguments as to like how it should be calculated. But again, my gut is like, okay, well, if Google wants to tell me, I got to follow it.
Yeah. And that's,
they
that's
rule
how I
the
felt.
World at this point.
Right. And that's how I felt about it. Cause when I first dug in, I was like, okay, I've got a lot to learn here. But then when I started integrating it within the SEO process, and that really popped at me, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is like, I can really use this data to my advantage to really improve these pages. And it is scary how accurate it is. I mean, almost every page that we look at that has a low engagement rate, it is well deserved. I mean, almost every time. I mean, usually the pages, like, for example, one of the most common things I'll see is pages with low engagement rate usually have ridiculously long intros. They likely push the content way below the fold, at least when in the context of informational content. And they just don't get into it, right? They just don't get into the content. And this is, and fortunately for me, I have a YouTube background now, and I understand how important this is. Mm-hmm. But if you look at how YouTube measures engagement, and now Google's measuring engagement rate, I'm starting to see some things that are going to be very similar in their same company. So
yeah.
So I think there's an advantage. I know you have a YouTube channel that you've been working on. And you've probably seen those engagement metrics, and it's really like when you see the way that YouTube decides how to broadcast content, it can really be applicable in the case of SEO too in Google as well. So yeah, I got super geeky about it, so I'm glad you talked about it. Is there any other kind of I don't want to say hidden gems, but like, are there any other hidden gems in analytics in the new version? You're like, ooh, like this is really helpful.
Yeah. So something that is slept on, like people just don't use, where I'm like, oh, come on, like we get this for free. So GA4 has anomaly detection built into it, which is, you know, them just using their machine learning where they can do like lookbacks and say, hey, like looking at your data over this time, again, like we get this for free. I don't think people realize like these are things that used to cost a lot of money, and if you were to hire someone to do it, to make it for you, like also a lot of money. But so they have anomaly detection built in throughout the platform. You'll see it in a bunch of different places, specifically line graphs, but you can use it and explore all that stuff. But if you go on the home page, which most people never go to because it's not overly helpful, but if you do go on the home page, you'll see these insights, and you'll see the insights throughout different reports, overview reports in GA4. But you can create your own custom insights. So you can say, hey, this metric, so we'll just use conversions for the sake of ease. So you can say, hey, I want to watch, like you can build your own insights. I want to watch conversions. Specifically, I want to watch organic converters. If there's an anomaly, I want you to capture that. And I want you to send me an email that says, hey, something's happened here. So a really good example of this would be like, let's say you are working on informational content. That's how you get a bunch of your conversions. But all of a sudden, in the last week, two new articles have been written. They're fresh content. They're pushed to the top of the rankings, and you've now slipped into fourth. It's a 4-month-old piece of content. You get an email that says, hey, your organic conversions, there's been an anomaly. You've dipped. Like, we were expecting for you to get 12 conversions, organic conversions today, and you got 4. And you can start to do that investigative, like, okay, so what has happened? We see that sessions are down. Why are sessions down? We go to Search Console. We see, oh, our position is down. Oh, you go to the search engine result page. You see that there's two new fresh pieces of content. This piece of content is 4 months old. It's an easy fix. You go in, you update the piece of content, right? And you can create those insights for just about any metric, and you can make them, like I said, like specific to audiences. So blog viewers, converters, organic users, people that come from Twitter, people that come from YouTube, whatever you want it to be. And I think that can be extremely effective, especially for the busy marketing manager, the busy business owner, what have you. But like everything else in GA4, it's kind of hidden. So I think that's probably why a lot of people aren't using it yet.
Yeah. So what's the threshold for to be considered an anomaly?
So it's a statistical significant change, basically. Okay. And so you can do it like a 7-day over 7-day, day over day. And they use like a 28, I believe they're using a 28-day look back. But it also depends on like if you're doing day over day, 28 days over 28 days, week over week, month over month, year over year.
Right.
What time period they're using.
Yeah, that's really, really useful. Yeah. Because then you can kind of, you can backtrack and see, okay, what were the actions we took that led to this decrease in performance? Yep. And then you could obviously, it's actually actionable.
And it can be an increase too. It's just a lot more. People are more nervous that things are going to go down than they are excited things are going to go up, unfortunately.
Yeah, fear of loss. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's, I want to ask you one thing specifically. So you do some speaking engagements.
Yeah.
And so I do want to know, because I haven't done a whole lot of those, by the way. So actually, I haven't done any of them, to be honest. So how well do those turn into leads for your business?
I think it depends on where you're speaking and what you're speaking about. Like I would say like MozCon, I probably got, 2 really good leads from MozCon. I get a couple leads, most of the time. I would say one that probably pans out. I usually get one that'll pan out for like a good amount of time. But it's more so like it's like writing a book, right? Like it's just giving you credibility. I will say if you're really looking to get leads, like those are marketing specific events. The best places to go speak if you want leads is like associations, right? Like go speak to realtors, go speak to plumbers, go speak to auctioneers. I've done like the National Auctioneers Association. I've went and spoke there. Like anytime you can do kind of those gigs, you're going to be a lot better. And speaking to your peers is freaking scary. Like I know if I go into a room of plumbers that like, I mean, just because it's not their trade, like I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
When I speak to them, like I know that I have a little bit more experience than them. When you go speak in front of your peers, you're like, oh God, like they could know something that I don't know. Right. Like maybe they have a better way of doing this. But that could also just be my imposter syndrome. I don't know.
Yeah. I was going to say that specifically. So you've obviously been able to overcome that and just get up there and get it done. Well, at least you get up there. So clearly you have. So how have you been able to how have you been able to overcome that or at least get better at it?
Therapy. I don't know. So here's a funny story. I actually cheated my way through an online public speaking class in college. Like I hate public speaking. It terrifies me. But I, my first job out of college, I went to MozCon very soon after I started there, like a month and a half after I started there. And I remember going and being like, holy cow, this is like Wonderland. This is so cool. People go on stage. They're like so smart and fun. And like this could be really cool. And I came back and I told one of my coworkers, hey, that was so cool. Like, I wish I could do something like that. And I was just kind of in this place where I was like really comfortable with everything. And I was like, you know, it's good to do things that make you uncomfortable. You learn so much more when you're uncomfortable than when you're comfortable. And so, yeah, like I told one of my coworkers, you know, I think I want to try doing that. And literally like the next week she came in and she was like, okay, so you're speaking at the AMA lunch in a month. And I was like, excuse me. At the time she was like, the chair of something. And she like pitched me to go speak. So the first room I spoke in was 150 people. And I was terrified, but I did it. Like people really liked it. And then they would start, like, I would see these people in town and they would be like, I still remember, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I was like, oh dude, that's really cool. And then I just did a couple more local things. And eventually, you know, it's all about who you know and who knows you. So eventually I was able to kind of speak at events out and about. It was just one of those things where like, I know that I'm going to be uncomfortable doing it. Like, I think more recently it's been hard. I I go through almost every engagement I've done recently, especially as I start doing bigger engagements, like MozCon, for instance, is huge. Like the first one I did was online, and it was pre-recorded, so it didn't feel like that big of a deal. But like standing on stage in front of those people, like people that I look up to in the industry, and like Brighton SEO and those kinds of things, there is a good like month when I'm about 5 months out where I'm like, should I pull from this conference and just tell them they need to find someone else?
Because starts to creep in.
Yeah, because I don't know, like, what do I have to say, you know? But I have really, really good people in my corner. I have a lot of really good mentors that I can call on and be like, hey, I'm thinking that maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. And they're able to, like, kind of talk me off the ledge. So really, I just have created a really good support system. And I'm not kidding about therapy, a lot of therapy as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm assuming, though, it's like building a muscle. You've done it so many times now at this point that, yeah, you're still got the nerves that, I mean, even professional athletes talk about getting nervous before games. Yeah. I mean,
but it's just because you care, right?
Yeah.
Because you care.
True. Yeah.
And I saw Mel Robbins one time, like, I don't even follow her. I just saw like an Instagram reel one time where she was like, one thing I do for my anxiety, before things, because anxiety, it's just one of those things like, that can be triggered by so many different things. But once you've become like an anxious person, like an overly anxious person, for me specifically, anytime my adrenaline starts to ramp up, I instantly go, I'm anxious. I could be super excited. I could be scared. I could be working out, whatever it is. The second my adrenaline goes up, I'm like, oh shit, I'm anxious. But Mel Robbins in this one random reel said, I would just start going, like when I'm backstage, I just kept going, I'm excited. So you like audibly saying it so that your brain hears it and like realizes. So I will, I go in the back, I listen to my music. I'm like jumping around. I'm like, I'm so excited. Some of it is just tricking yourself. But yeah, I mean, you get nervous because you care. Like, you care about what people think. You care about the content that you're sharing. Like, again, a lot of what I do is just because, like, I want to help other people. And like, I want them to take something that they're going to go and apply. And I really care about that. So yeah, I'm excited. And I just, you know, that's why I get a little bit nervous, but we're working on it. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that there's some statistic that rolls around. It's like people are more afraid of death, or no, they're more afraid of public speaking than death. So when you get up on stage, I'm assuming that the nerves, the anxiety starts to kind of fall down. Once you get in your groove, you're probably good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always focus on, like, I tell people, like, I always make sure I have a really good intro and a really good outro. And I literally just black out everything in between. Like, I know my stuff, right? Like, I know what I'm going to say. I know whatever. I do my own slides. A lot of speakers, once they start speaking at like bigger events, have somebody else that will like do the design of their slides. I do all of my slides. So I've spent a lot of time with the material by the time that I'm up on stage. I can't speak from a script, so I don't script anything. I know like an idea of what I'm going to say. The intro I'll know basically by heart by the time I get on stage. And once I nail that, I'm like, cool, we did it. We're here. And there's no turning back. So you just got to go. Yeah. But yeah, once you get in there and everything else just kind of becomes a blur.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, where can people find you? I know you have a course. I know you have the analytics side of things. So where can people find you?
Yeah. So I hang out on Twitter a ton. That's where I'm probably the most active, but I have a YouTube channel. If you just look up Brie E. Anderson, Brie like the cheese, B-R-I-E E Anderson, on Twitter, YouTube, wherever. My site is beastanalyticsco.com, and that's where you can find the course. You can learn a little bit about what I do and how I help people become data driven. And yeah, I love to make new friends. So let's do it.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And obviously you won't be able to track the call to action you just did in this video. It's going to be direct. So yeah, sorry about
yeah,
that.
We'll see.
Yeah. But thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.